really the answer isn't building new walls. It's about flipping your mindset about a care model. So how can you create the same care, you know, with the help of technology?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Better Care Podcast, where we tell the stories of clinicians, healthcare leaders, and innovators who are improving the way clinicians work and deliver care. I'm Spencer Holloman, the SVP of Marketing at Evidence Care, and today, Evidence Care's co-founder and chief medical officer, Dr. Brian Fengler, will be interviewing Dr. Stacy Johnston, vice president and chief applications officer of Baptist Health in Jacksonville, Florida. Dr. Johnson previously served as Baptist Health's Epic Implementation Executive and CMIO in 2019 before moving to her current role in November of 2021. She is a board-certified family physician and a member of the Baptist Hospitalist Group and has extensive knowledge and insight on EMRs and clinical technologies, which we're going to talk a lot about today in this episode. Prior to Baptist Health, she served as CMIO and medical director of the Hospitalist Program at Beaufort Memorial Hospital and has been in leadership positions with various executive health information organizations. Thank you for trusting us with your time and listening along today. Brian, the stage is all yours.
Awesome. Thank you, Spencer. Well, Stacy, first off, thank you so much for joining us today. It's so great to have you with us and to see you. We've gotten to know each other a little bit through conferences over the last few years, and I'm really excited for the conversation today. So before we talk about all the amazing things you've been you've accomplished at Baptist Health, how did you get into clinical informatics and become a leader in this space?
Yeah. So, thank you so much for hosting me today. I'm really excited about joining, having this time together. So how did I start in this? And it's, I think being in the right place at the right time or the wrong place at the wrong time, however you want to look at it. When I was in residency, it was at that time that they were moving from paper medical records to electronic medical records. In doing so, the residents were really kind of leading the change. And so I ended up becoming a super user and had been placing CPOE orders and doing my electronic documentation. And by the time I completed my resident, I was one of their super users. So that was really exciting and I enjoyed it. And so then I became an attending at Beaufort Memorial Hospital, as you all previously mentioned. And so I moved from electronic medical records back to paper. And I thought, oh, okay, well, here we go again. And so next thing I know, they were doing the electronic conversion as well, too. And I was the only attending at that time that had ever done any sort of electronic order entry or documentation. So, of course, next thing happens, I become the CMIO of the hospital. And so I think it was just really about being there and being at the right time of this change. And then one of the things that I've always learned is, you know, saying yes to opportunity. And so, you know, when they asked me to be a super user in residency, I said yes. And then when they asked me to become the CMIO, I said yes. And so at that time, I was leading up a lot of the implementations and transition from paper to electronic medical records at Beaufort. And then, of course, the ongoing optimization of an EMR at that time. So then Baptist knocks on my door and says, hey, we're looking for someone like you. And, you know, so I said, yes, I said, sure, let's do it. And so I became the associate chief medical information officer, at which point in time, the goal was to then transition into the CMIO role. With that being said, I became the CMIO on November 1st. And the ongoing joke is, or at least my ongoing joke is, November 1st, I became the CMIO. And on November 2nd, they decided to move to Epic. Mm-hmm. So I was the shortest tenured CMIO at Baptist. I was the CMIO for only a couple of months. And then they asked me to head up the Epic implementation. And I said yes. And so next thing I know, all these years later, we have been live on the system 18 months. And I've loved every minute. It's been a journey, you know, some ups and downs, more ups than downs, more bumps, you know, some bumps in the road. But overall, I couldn't be prouder of where we are in the, you know, the journey that I've participated in.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. Now, in previous conversations you've shared with us, so you guys have only been live on Epic for about a year now, but yet have already achieved a 10-star rating. How are you guys able to accomplish this in such a short period of time?
Yeah, so I really look at that implementation as there were some things that we just knocked it out of the park, and there were some opportunities. And so I think where we knocked it out of the park was having the number of people participate in the build. And so this really felt like a collaborative build. We had over 1,100 people participate in the build of the system. That was about 10% of our organization. And we had over 300 physicians participate in the build. We had 100 physicians participate as STS trainers. So it really was collaborative. It was really a lot of people were coming to the table. And you have to remember, we were implementing during COVID. So, you know, your typical Epic implementation where everyone comes in a room together to make decisions, that's not how we did it. And so we had work groups. We, in fact, the patient experience work group had 95 people on it. So that seemed like a lot to Epic. But I said, but that's how Baptist is, that everyone wants a seat at the table. And because we were building it in this virtual environment, we were able to have more seats at the table. So the excitement, the culture of collaboration, all of that was actually facilitated by doing the entire build during an epidemic. Where I think we had opportunities is then, how do you then take those 1,100 people and socialize all those changes to the remaining body? And so change management was, I think, something we had struggled with a little bit. But again, I think that was part of the result of being in an epidemic. You know, we were doing this during COVID, and so we didn't have the number of super users that we could have used. And we were running a nursing and MA shortage at that time, you know, again, coming off the heels of COVID. And so typically in your clinics, your MAs would be your super users, but we didn't have enough MAs to do that. So we didn't have enough super users. So we had to bring in external at the elbow support. So again, I think we've learned some bumps in the road, but having that initial culture of collaboration helped us get there. And then what also helped get us to the 10 from the time of go live was the fact that we did stick pretty closely to foundation. So when you reach your 10 gold stars, there's components about adoption and there's components that are just pure technical components. So the pure technical components were much easier to achieve. It was those ones that were towards the end that were more about adoption and utilization of the system that we really kind of had to do a final push at the end. We actually, we had decided to take the pressure off the team and say, you know, let's not focus on 10 gold stars our first year after go live. Let's just focusing on optimization of the system, you know, change management, training, at the elbow support. And then our Epic counterpart called me. This was, you know, I'd say 3 weeks before this submission deadline for the gold stars achievement. And he said, you know, you're at 9.5. I said, what? I didn't realize. I mean, we weren't really tracking it. And he said, yeah, you all have done a really good job of keeping to build and optimize the system in your post-go-live period of time. But it would take that final push, you know, to get us across the finish line. So I asked my boss and I said, hey, you know, we're really not that far from 10. And I said, do you agree with us trying for it? And he's like, absolutely, let's go for it. So it was in that last 3 weeks, really kind of like all hands on deck. Let's table other things so we can focus on what do we need to reach that 10 gold stars. And this is where that everyone participating from training to informatics to your operational and clinical leaders and, of course, your technical teams. And so achieving 10 gold stars 11 months after go live was really about the entire system participating. And so it was an achievement for all of us.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, we know how much physicians love change. What did your doctors think, you know, moving over to a new EHR and you know, how have they sort of been on that journey for the past year now?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I am definitely a little grayer than I was when I first started this journey. And so we used to joke and say that we need to invest in Kevlar vest. But I think that the change was rough for many of them, but there were also other things happening. Again, their clinics were short on MAs. They didn't have super users in the clinic. the trainings. We've started working with Class Arch Collaborative, and we've really learned that what we were teaching was buttonology, which is click here, but not necessarily workflow training.
Yeah.
And so I think if I were to ever do this again, I would make sure that we weren't focusing on buttonology, that we were really focusing on proper at the elbow support, workflow training, and the day in the life sessions, really boosting those up prior to go live so that when you do go live, it's a little easier for them. And so I think there were, you know, it was hard. It was really hard on the docs, and therefore it was hard on us. We didn't like seeing them staying up until midnight finishing their notes, or, you know, having to get to work at 5 a.m. to pre-chart. And so that it was not fun for anyone, for the organization. But I think a lot of this had to do with the fact that we were in COVID, that we had, you know, some change management opportunities, and we were not fully staffed enough to support the amount of at the elbow support needed. But in that first year, we really focused on the docs. And, you know, we said, let's go out and round. My team, so analysts, they were rounding in clinics. They were rounding with the physicians. You know, we made it apparent that I'm available. Here's my cell phone mm-hmm. number. The CMIO, their team, they were out rounding. We increased our at the elbow support and our support specialist program. We moved the physician calls from the help desk directly to the support specialist team. You know, we've been reevaluating our training curriculum and programs and accommodating for workflow training. And so so there are things that we've learned and working again so closely with the Arch Collaborative and having that better end user experience, and how can we increase that, you know, usability for the system, you know, with our physicians. Really diving into the signal data. So those that were struggling in the system, having targeted training, saying, I'm going to block an hour with you. So to shadow you, see what you're doing well and see where you have some opportunities, really working on efficiencies in the system. And so that first year, year and a half was really about the docs. And the docs are now doing better in the system. We do these listening sessions. So 5 physician leaders across the system, we actually go out and we sit with the docs. We listen to them. And I was fully prepared for kind of epic bashing. I was like, oh, this, you know, we're still in the change management process and the, you know, the recovery from that initial implementation. But I had been pleasantly surprised that many people are like, hey, we love Epic. There are still some things we'd like to see change, yeah. But we agree with the change. We agree with being in the standardized platform and this integrated EHR. But yes, there's still more things we can continue to do. But now we also need to do that same focus on nursing and the nursing informatics and the nursing workflow and how to decrease time spent in the EMR for our nursing colleagues as well too. So overall, I feel like the optimization has been in alignment with the physician needs. And now we're going to take that one step further and focus on all of the other caregivers.
Yeah. Obviously, there's a lot of consolidation in healthcare and a lot of, you know, we hear from different colleagues, you know, that many health systems are going through different conversions to different EHRs. And, you know, some of them take the approach of, you know, we're going to roll this hospital and these clinics on and then these and then those. You guys took the approach to go kind of big bang all at once. What were the thoughts around that? What were the pros? What were the cons? And knowing what you know now, would you, you know, recommend that approach, you know, for folks looking to do a conversion?
Yeah. So we decided to rip the Band-Aid off. And so not only that, we decided to move up our implementation. So remember, we started during COVID. And so we started and then we finished in masks. So we started in masks, we finished in masks. And we thought, you know what? There's hurricane season and we're building a new hospital. And so let's move up our implementation. So we knew what we were tasking ourselves with was going to be a challenge. I would not do it any differently, at least for Baptist. We are a regional location. So if you think about the patient journey and even your provider journey, what would that patient experience look like? So if we did inpatient versus ambulatory later, having that varied caregiver experience, you know, so you've got your docs on one system in the clinic and then another system in the inpatient space, or that patient experience where they're one portal for ambulatory care setting and another portal for inpatient setting. And just, we couldn't come up with any way to not do it as a big bang implementation. Yeah. Now, if you were a, you know, a national system or across five states, I can see the desire behind like a regional going like with these six hospitals or this state and then rolling to another region. Mm-hmm. But Baptiston itself was fairly regional. So it just made more sense for us to have that entire go live as being a singular experience. And it's hard. It was very hard. The, again, I think making sure you have the right at the elbow support for a big bang is, you need to think about that honestly within your first months of pre-planning. And so making sure that you have the proper support to support a large big bang is so important.
Any final, I'm going to switch topics here in a little bit, but any final thoughts you'd give to colleagues that are maybe 6-12 months away from that conversion?
I would say, you know, just keep on going. You're going to have some highs. You're going to have some lows. Drink lots of coffee. But, you know, try to find the joy in something that is so, it's changing. I mean, it was truly transformational for Baptist. In fact, I had a neurologist that thanked me and said that this was the most transformational thing that Baptist has ever done. And he felt like they had done it really well. And so there will be some joy, and to find those moments of joy and hold on to them, create a team that you can rely on. And I couldn't have done it without my team. So like when we talk about the 10 gold stars, I actually had probably the least amount to do with that than anyone else. That, you know, make sure you choose analysts that are hardworking, but resilient. I mean, you need that level of resiliency because, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to be hard. You're learning a new system and it doesn't feel like it's working. And then you build and then you realize you built it wrong. And so you got to rebuild it again. So having that culture of collaboration within your own team that's building and maintaining the system is so hard, is so important. And then additionally with that, I would say, you know, the leadership that surrounds this team is really important too. Finding leaders that are coaching those generals that will lead you in the battle. So finding those generals that the team wants to follow and really that the organization wants to follow. So mm-hmm. making sure that you find the right generals. And so making sure that you have found someone that people will follow into battle. I mean, battle is a strong word, but it you want someone that's going to lead the troops, so to speak, and that isn't afraid to get a little dirty themselves and dig into the details and find out enough and to start those crucial conversations of, you know, it's really important that we talk about online scheduling. I know we've never done it before, but this is the road of the future for our patients. So what does that digital experience look like for our patients? And we have to embrace online scheduling. I've had that conversation 100 times during the Epic implementation, and now we're fully embracing FastPass and online scheduling. And yep. we have like a 55% MyChart usage rate. So it's just, you know, you need that leadership there that is, can help lead the transformation.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, not only have you had a successful conversion, achieved 10 stars in your first year, but somehow you guys have also found the bandwidth, the capacity, the energy to even start to optimize. And, you know, you shared on LinkedIn recently, you know, you had a project that saved 70 million clicks for your providers. Talk about that project and how you're able to do that.
Yeah. So we always like to say that we had a high risk implementation because we weren't just switching out EMRs, but we're like, let's switch out everything. And so we basically, you know, nothing was off the table, in other words. And so we switched out our Wi-Fi. We looked at our OB system. We switched that out. We basically took this opportunity to look at our current state systems and were these the technologies that were going to carry us into the future? Mm-hmm. And in some instances, we felt like they weren't. And so we partnered with new solutions And one in particular I was really excited about partnering with was Dr. First. And we were actually looking at them when we were still on our legacy systems, and really just to supplement our medication history search engine, because we felt like we were missing some of the smaller mom and pop areas. So we thought, you know what, let's just see what they can offer in addition to our medication search history. And then when we decided, oh, well, we're switching to Epic, let's put a pause on that. And then I thought, well, what can you do with our Epic implementation? Mm-hmm. So they had said, well, we have this new AI solution out there and we're looking for some early adopters. I'm like, sign us up. So basically it's a smart search engine, a smart processor that will take the medication history from the pharmacies and infer any free text or missing data. And so where we were before, what we're ranking about 70% of our SIG field. So, and for anyone that's kind of not a physician or pharmacist, those are the blank fields for filling out a prescription. So one tablet twice daily. And so we had about 60 to 70% of our fields were filled in, and the others would have to be brought in by free text, or just you had to type them in, or they were just blank fields. You didn't really know what was there. So that was, we felt like an opportunity for us. And so we thought, okay, well, we'll do this with Go Live. And so we went live with the smart processor technologies in place. And we are now filling in about 94% of those fields. And it will actually show you if it was brought in, because they still want the pharmacy tech or the nurses to verify that this information is correct. You know, you don't want to bring in improper data, but it helps save all of that time. So instead of clicking in those fields, that information is automatically filled into those fields. And then you just accept the SIGs as they are being presented to you as a nurse or the pharmacy tech. And in our period of time, in that time and motion study, it saved us approximately 22,000 hours of nursing and pharmacy tech hours as well too. So not only does it help you minimize errors with transcription, but it helps save time in all these clicking, you know, minimizing the amounts of clicks that each of our caregivers had to provide.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, so Dr. First was a partner on that. You know, you've mentioned to me in the past some other really innovative companies that you're working with, and you know, some of their products. So love to have you highlight some of those and talk about some of the things that you're excited about right now.
Sure. So we decided to switch our OB partners, and so we needed a bidirectional interface where we could have our laboring moms on the fetal monitor strips, and then the nurses at the bedside could either document in the perinatal strip or in Epic. And so we partnered with OBIX. But what we found was, in doing so, our OBs were having difficulty reviewing the strips in a kind of a more mobile solution. You know, again, mobility is the key, and trying to keep, you know, the caregiver in this much better experience, instead of having them go to a computer to log in to see the perinatal strips. So we did partner with Airstrip, and so we've been working on them with them on, you know, what does that look like. We'd still love to be able to document within Airstrip back to Epic. So that's one of the things that we're not quite there yet, but that's one of the things that we would like to continue to work with them on. But our OBs love having these fetal monitor strips on their phone. So if they get a call about decelerations, they can quickly look on their phone at the strips. Other cool things we're doing are, we have found that we have been a really great partner with Epic. We tend to be at the earlier stages of their upgrades. And, you know, so once we moved to Hyperdrive, we did a triple upgrade, which was a little scary. We got through it. But we are now kind of at the forefront of their quarterly upgrade structure. And so that has allowed for us to take a lot of their features and functionality. And so we are one of the early adopters of their Epic AI in-basket augmented response for in-basket messaging solutions. And so this is a kind of a ChatGPT AI solution that, through prompt engineering, allows for the messages to be queued up for the provider to review. And we have found that about 60% of the body of the message is kept. And then we are hoping to move that more into that 80%. You never want to be fully 100% because then, you know, you want to make sure that the providers have the ability to add their little flair to the messages. But what was interesting about that project was the nuance of the language, trying to get a bunch of docs to agree with how do you sign off? Do you say thank you? Do you say thanks? Do you sign off your name? Do you sign off doctor? Do you? And so we all agreed with thanks. And so that's kind of where we landed. But we took about 30 minutes to talk about how to sign off on a message. And we also found that a lot of the studies show that these kind of these AI messages are more empathetic because it says, hi, how are you doing? I hope you're having a great day. Whereas typical physician, again, being a physician, I probably wouldn't start my message with that. I'd be like, hi, thank you for your email. You know, thank you for your message. Here's what the answer is. And so utilizing some of the AI, but you want to make sure that it's the right tone so it still sounds like the doctor. So that's what we've been working on is the tone of some of these. We have had a couple of hallucinations, but very minimal in terms of some of the AI components. So we've also asked to be early adopters with Epic on some of their summarizer programs. That's really where discharge summaries for, again, being an inpatient hospitalist, I would love to have an AI solution to help me with discharge summaries. We are looking at PyText for CAPD, computer assisted physician documentation. Say that three times fast. So we are really trying to push our limits. We are doing some cool things with Nuance and the Dax Copilot. We went live last week with like 20 providers, and now we already have, you know, it's in the hundreds of how many providers are already on Dax Copilot, and the docs are just clamoring for it. They are super excited about Dax Copilot. So if y'all haven't looked at Dax Copilot yet, I definitely highly recommend it. Our docs love it. And so now we have, you know, neurosurgeons asking for it, oncologists asking for it. The ED and inpatient space isn't quite ready yet, but we are working with Nuance on how do we get the same type of experience for our inpatient providers, our ICU critical care areas as well too. So again, closely working with a Nuance on that. And then of course, Microsoft. Microsoft is one of our top partners. Mm-hmm. So working with a 360 Copilot and summaries of an automation of some of the kind of administrative tasks. And so we have 360 turned on for people that are, their primary role is generating minutes and assigning out tasks. And so we have 360 do that for us. So it's just push of the button and here's your meeting minutes and here's what the to do's are. And so love having, you know, love having this innovative culture here at Baptist where we're, you know, we don't really have an innovative arm, so to speak. We are all responsible for innovation. Mm-hmm. And so we all go to conferences, hear cool things, we bring it back. You know, we may do a pilot, and maybe the pilot succeeds and maybe it doesn't. And I just love participating and being part of a system that really is embracing innovation to allow for technology to help our clinicians care for our patients.
Yeah. I think it's amazing to hear that, especially with all you've been through in the last year, that it is still the operators, they're the ones innovating. And we do see it, you know, across the, you know, healthcare industry. A lot of times, you know, where you have a separate innovations team, but they're disconnected from the operators and they're trying to go out and find innovative solutions. But the operators are like, hey, here's all the projects we're working on. And so there's always that little disconnect. And the fact that you guys are the innovators is amazing. And it's probably helped, you know, get you the speed to results that you're seeing.
We always try to not pursue a solution just for the fact of it's a cool solution. So that bright and shiny object, you know, so it really should boil down to what problem are you trying to solve? And I guess that's that clinical informatics background. And so what problem are you trying to solve? And, you know, everywhere you turn is AI now. So, you know, when I go to AI conferences or I speak at AI conferences, one of the things I always say is do not implement AI for the sake of AI. It still comes down to the question, what problem are you trying to solve? And then if you have a problem that you have, look at the various technologies, including AI, including new technology that's out there. And so that's how we usually start our projects, is having something that we just can't get right and we'd like to be a little bit more efficient. And so are there any tools and technologies out there that can help us become more efficient or do this one thing a little bit better?
Yeah. Now, when you mention all those companies that you're working with, you know, obviously there's a cost to all these things. How do you guys as a system sort of evaluate, you know, new opportunities, new products, and then look at that cost side? And is there an ROI, you know, benchmark that you use? Or is it strictly at this point, you know, we're looking to optimize the doctor's workflow? How do you measure those variables and figure out, is this a solution that's going to bring financial ROI to the health system?
Yeah. So I think at this point in time, all systems are evaluating ROI as at least one of the factors to take into consideration. So you really will have to look at the clinician and their experience, their workflow, patient safety, obviously regulatory, mm-hmm. and then the ROI. So those are really kind of the three buckets that we consider. If you have something that is high work effort, high lift, without any significant return to either that clinician experience or ROI, then we're not going to move forward.
Yep.
If you've got something that's a minimal work effort, you're not sure of the ROI, we might try it. You know, let's do a pilot. And I think this is really where partnering with your vendors and having that chief applications officer be that person to partner with the vendors and say, hey, I really like what you're saying, but I'm not 100% convinced. You know, let's work together. Let's do some creative financing options. And let's, can you come down on your price if we do this for a period of time? And then I think I try to be pretty persuasive, and I usually am able to do it in such a way that we are able to pilot certain things that we're not convinced are going to have the ROI. And then if they do, then we will sign on for, okay, for next fiscal year, let's put you in the full budget. We'll plan on, you know, rolling it out across the system. So I think that's, and I know pilot sometimes doesn't have the positive word that everyone, you know, but I think you have to be deliberate with a pilot. What is your end game? What are your goals? What are your metrics? And then what is your end date of the pilot? And if you realize those metrics by that date, what is your next step? How are you actually going to pay for this new technology? But if you do not realize those KPIs or the ROI that you are trying to receive, then you need to be willing to let it go. And, you know, mm-hmm. I have had to learn that the hard way. I thought there were some cool things and that I'm like, this seems like this was going to work really well. And then it didn't. And then either we didn't implement in the right area, or we didn't design the right workflow, or just really was not, we just didn't really need it to the extent that, you know, we thought we did. So we're like, well, we're not going to move forward anymore. So you have to be able to fail fast. And that's where I think, you know, a pilot does help, but not in perpetuity. You know, you have to fail fast. You have to decide, and then you have to move on.
Yeah. Love that. So we've talked a lot about, obviously, your efforts in the EHR, but, you know, you are also an executive at the system level. What are the, you know, what are some of the top initiatives right now, you know, the organization is looking towards?
I think anything that will help you make money or save money is anything that most systems are going to be talking about. So length of stay, major initiative across our system, mm-hmm. as well as all major systems, clinical documentation efforts, and, you know, increasing your CMI and having that more automated revenue cycle back-end processes. So I think you need to think through automating some of those simple tasks. And what do you do with those hours? Do you reduce FTEs, or do you train those FTEs to do something different? So I think that's something organizations need to think through. So really pushing towards automation. I would also say, again, with looking at length of stay, this is really building in your workflow efficiencies. So optimizing your EHR system to meet the needs, looking at your workflows, evaluating how to collaborate across systems, whether it's sharing images, whether it's your communication platform, is everyone on your communication platform? Those are some of the hurdles that you need to think through. And so also looking at hospital at home programs. So, mm-hmm. you know, length of stay can be really tied to these. They're not quite, you know, typically ready for a typical discharge, but they're not, you know, you're not really doing much on a day-to-day basis. So pushing your hospital at home to the limits. So can you have nurse practitioners, PAs, and other advanced care practitioners go out into the homes, monitor these patients? What kind of devices do they have? You know, remote patient monitoring. I think all of that will help decrease your length of stay if you really embrace this kind of this virtual remote monitoring program, and then having some sort of virtual care clinic. You know, I know of other systems setting up a virtual hospital. You know, we're setting up virtual care, primary care clinic, and more on-demand video visits. So we're really trying to move into that space. But I think there's a lot that you could be doing with that to really move your patient care services out of the systems, out of the hospital systems, into more of an ambulatory care system. And part of that is with Jacksonville. Jacksonville is growing significantly. So we just can't have enough access into our hospital systems. And really, the answer isn't building new walls. It's about flipping your mindset about a care model. So how can you create the same care, you know, with the help of technology? And then finally, I would say the last thing is, of course, you know, return on investment. So how can we capture better revenue and, you know, generating more revenue? So real-time eligibility, your coding and documentation, automating some of the CDI. And then, though, you know, I wouldn't be a good healthcare executive if I didn't talk about AI. So what is your plan for AI and how are you going to embrace that at your facility?
Yeah. I only have one more question, but I'm gonna add one. I've never heard of a virtual hospital. What is a virtual hospital?
So, you know, I know that there are systems out there that basically have your remote monitoring. So we have a CMU unit, central monitoring unit. And so could you set that up? You could also have a hospitalist, your night hospitalist, rounding on different patients at different locations. Your day hospitalist has seen them, put their hands on them, but your night hospitalist doesn't necessarily need to be in the same location. I mean, of course, you would need someone on call for rapid responses or code blues, but sometimes it just needs someone popping their head into the room. And so, you know, a lot of your consults, do they need to be seen in person? I would say probably not on a daily basis. Like a nephrologist really is trending labs a lot. And so do they need to physically be in the room? I think you could probably push it to the limits with some of their virtual care within this kind of this virtual hospital program.
That's pretty cool. Okay. Last question for me, and it's a fun one. You get to design your own building in Verona. What's the theme?
Oh, gosh. So I am such a huge Disney fan. If they made like a little mini Walt Disney World, I would be totally in heaven. And so I love the slides, but like, can you imagine like throwing Mickey Mouse in there as well, too? And I mean, just having the characters and just, I mean, having Goofy walk around, like, wouldn't that make everyone happy? And maybe like merry-go-round could be there and like a little mini Cinderella's castle, like that. And churros, if they sold the Disney churros and the Disney popcorn, like I would be in heaven.
I think we gotta get that one on the list.
I think so too.
I like it. Well, Stacey, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Love the conversation. Love all the insights on how you guys are optimizing, you know, your new EHR and still continuing to innovate. So thank you so much for the discussion today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Better Care Podcast. To ensure you never miss an episode, we encourage you to subscribe to the podcast on your preferred platform. Additionally, your ratings and reviews are invaluable in helping us reach a wider audience. Please consider leaving a review, and if you do, email us a screenshot at marketing@evidence.care, and we'll send you a thank you gift. For access to exclusive content and further healthcare insights created by Evidence Care, please visit evidence.care/bettercarepodcasts and subscribe to our email list. We appreciate your support and look forward to connecting.